Hello to all Earth citizens and welcome to my Conscious Coaching Podcast. This is Dr. Kianush, founder and creative director of MCCG. My Conscious Coaching Group is a non-political, non-religious 501c3 coaching nonprofit with initiatives in healthcare, leadership, and education with focus on emotional and spiritual intelligence. Our vision is to raise self and global awareness for a conscious mind through education and application of EQ and SQU, and our mission is to connect, collaborate, and partner with hospitals, academics, colleges, and medical schools and organizations to embrace growth, self-healing, and self-coaching to achieve well-being and peak performance of individuals and the team as a one connected whole. Today, our very dear and near guest speaker is Dr. Jeffrey Hall. Dr. Hall, PhD BCC, is an executive coach and clinical psychologist who specializes in CEO and C-suite leadership development and coaching with a wide range of organizations from startups to Fortune 50 industrial and technology firms. He is a clinical instructor in psychology at Harvard Medical School and executive director at the Institute of Coaching, a Harvard Medical School affiliate, an adjunct professor of leadership at New York University. He holds the board certified coach designation BCC and has over 5,000 hours of coaching experience with executives across the globe. Prior to becoming an independent consultant, he worked as a global head of human resource for Booz Allen Hamilton. He holds a BA degree from Bardeen College and an MBA in organizational psychology from University of Maryland, and also a PhD in depth clinical psychology from Pacifica Graduate Institute. Dr. Hall is an accomplished researcher, writer, speaker, and he has written two books and published in a wide range of business and leadership and organizational psychology journals, including Investor's Business Daily, The New York Times, and Harvard Business Review. His best-selling book, Flex, The Art and Science of Leadership in Coaching in a Coaching World, was published by Penguin Random House in 2020. I personally have known and learned from Dr. Hall over a decade of my coaching journey in and out of Institute of Coaching. More than anything, Jeff is a wonderful human being, unique soul, and a pioneer and leading example in the world of coaching and leadership. Welcome to MCCG Podcast, Jeff.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Pleasure to have you here. Jeff, please let us know, how do you like the world to know you or remember about you?
I mean, I guess the thing that's probably most up to date for me is becoming a citizen of the world. I'm originally from Boston area and then lived across the U.S. In Dallas, Texas, and in San Diego, California, and then many years in New York City. And now I have moved to Europe, living in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And I think, you know, being part of the Institute of Coaching, we're really committed to bringing coaching to the world. So I guess I put my money where my mouth is and got on a plane and moved to Europe and have recently just got back from India. And where wow. I was speaking with Magda, the CEO of ICF, the International Coach Federation. So, I'm trying to be a citizen of the world.
Yeah, you definitely are the Earth citizens and covering all over the globe, Jeff, with your wings and wisdom. So, so happy to have you here. So we are talking about a little bit about your book, Flex, and the Art and Science of Leadership in a Changing World. Tell us where the idea of writing it came from and what is it about overall?
Yeah, the original idea for the book Flex emerged from my reflection on the evolution of my coaching practice over quite a few years, basically noticing that the types of people that I was coaching, the leaders that I was working with, was changing dramatically, and the types of issues that we were working on was changing dramatically. Uh-huh. And I wanted to know whether that was just a fluke, whether it was just something anecdotal to my personal practice, or whether there were actually major changes taking place in the leadership landscape that coaches across the world were noticing. So I did a small research project interviewing a large number of coaches that are part of the Institute of Coaching, and ask them what they were seeing in terms of the changes in the demographics, the focus areas of the clients they were working with in leadership capacities. And out of that came what I consider to be an updated framework around what it takes to be an effective leader, what coaches are working with leaders on these days, and some fundamental shifts from what I would consider the historically traditional approach to leadership, which was how to become more decisive and authoritative and visionary and leading from the top down, towards what many of us as coaches working with leaders were starting to see, which was a very varied change in demographics, more women becoming leaders, more people of color, more people from very many cultures stepping up into leadership roles, even into the C-suite, and what it takes to be effective in today's world as a leader has shifted dramatically. So that was really the intention in my writing, obviously, about the book is called Flex. So clearly the key theme is, as leaders, how to become more flexible, how to be more adaptable, and what do you need as a leader, and how can a coach help you to be able to work more effectively in today's world, which is much more diverse and obviously more complex, and coming out of the pandemic even more so than it had been, let's say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so glad that you did this work. And I just wanted to quote the praise that Margaret Whitley has written in the back of your book cover about your work. That is the world-class workout to strengthen the muscles of adaptive leadership, developing the powers of mind, body, and spirit to become the leaders the world needs now. And getting to that leadership part, so what are the different style of leadership, referring to your book, talking about the alpha and beta leadership and how it's related to coaching?
Well, I think there's some fundamental shifts that I try to focus on based on the research. One of those is the expansion from being coached, trained, or even naturally just showing up as what we call an alpha style leader toward a broader range that includes what I call a beta style leader. And it's really including the two together. So becoming more of a portfolio of skills as the context changes. We all know what it takes to be an alpha, you know, a type A driven, visionary, directive, authoritative leader, as I mentioned. But a beta leader is someone who leads a team in a more inclusive approach, more collaborative, leading in a way, another way of expressing it is leading from behind, being more of a listener, creating dialogue and collaboration, and fundamentally trying to get the best out of everyone. And at the end of the day, the newest leaders on the landscape that I work with are really not so much trying to be the top of the pyramid so much as they are trying to leverage everyone in the room, everyone that's inside the organization, to get them to step up and lead. So it's really moving from an I to we, or from an individual to a collective leadership approach.
Yeah, exactly. And I can imagine how emotionally also make a difference, you know, the leaders that not only lead from the front, but as you mentioned, from the behind and back. And also I can add to it on the side too. So to be involved and in an inclusive way, as you mentioned, with their peoples. And I was reading your book. I came to this start-stop model on page 141. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What do you mean by this model and where does it work?
Sure. I mean, the theme within that context was around how do leaders, or in fact, any of us as human beings, how do we become more effective at dealing with our triggers or those moments when we get upset or bothered or frustrated? You know, we all have pet peeves. We all have those moments when we lose our cool, when we become impatient, right? Mm-hmm. And what I have found is that the And I kind of framed it up as a stop method or a start method, but it's actually fairly simple, which is that if you're becoming more self-aware, then the key to understanding what triggers you is to reflect on when are those moments when you have a tendency to act before you think. So the START model, you know, stimulation, trigger, action, right? And that is very common for all of us, that we get stimulated or we get triggered, and then we don't take the time to really think. We actually act very quickly. So the problem with that is that if you go from stimulus to trigger to action, then what do you get? You get a reaction. So that's the START method, right? So you act and then you react. And what happens is it actually devolves into what could have been a small breakdown can sometimes become a major conflict. And the antidote to that that I share in my STOP method basically is to take the stimulus, the trigger, and instead of acting immediately, to step back and try to create some opening for spaciousness, for reflection. Even if it's just a few seconds, sometimes you have time to step back and, you know, reflect on what just happened and why you're upset or why you're frustrated. Sometimes you only have a few seconds, but all it takes is the awareness that it's better to open yourself to a moment of reflection. You know, why is this happening? What is the story that I'm telling myself? What is the fear that got triggered? And rather than shifting into an immediate action or a fear-based response, that you recognize that the person or the group that's triggering you is probably well-intentioned. You know, 99% of the time, people are not trying to frustrate you. They're not trying to trigger you. And so if you include that moment of opening, that spaciousness for a pause, for reflection, then you can respond in a more positive, maybe an inquisitive, curious way. And instead of getting an immediate reaction, you might actually have a dialogue. So it's really a way of becoming more aware of our own triggers, because we all have them as individuals, and becoming more responsive rather than reactive.
Yeah, exactly. Going back to that great quote that between the stimulus and the response, there is a gap. So if you can create that gap and widen that gap, we can just reflect on it and be aware, our own self-awareness and also the self-other awareness. So it is what is triggering us and what is triggering others. And there is so much, as you mentioned, to know and learn from it with the curiosity. And reverse what they said, curiosity is not killing the cat, is healing the cat. So
exactly. But in order to be curious, you have to have the awareness that what triggered you or what upset you or what sets you off is likely something that's coming from inside you, not necessarily coming from the individual or the group that poked at you. So that takes a little bit of awareness. It takes a momentary stop.
Yeah, exactly. Awareness and openness to let it in, and to coming into us. Right. Jeff, what is your opinion about the roles of the emotion and the spirituality in leadership? I know that you have talked about the emotional leadership in your book, the mental, emotional, and somatic, but I just wanted that you elaborate a little bit on that for us.
Well, I think there are two components to that. So first of all, the fundamental themes that I dig into in the book around the rational approach that we take to leadership is only one dimension. So the other two are the emotional context, of which there is always an emotional underpinning to everything we do as human beings, and to become more aware of your feelings. Yeah. And that connects to what we just talked about with triggers, which are usually emotional responses. But then also the somatic piece is becoming aware of the physical energy, your physical space. We call it somatic from the Greek soma, which means body. And the most effective leaders become aware of their physical presence, their eye contact, the way they sit or stand, where they are in the room, the energy of the space they are with their team. This is really important for creating psychological safety. So the emotional and somatic components of leadership are equally important, and they often get left out of the mix. And then to your point about spiritual, what I would say about this, because we all have our own narratives around what spirituality means to us, and it can vary greatly depending upon your culture, your religious background, where you were brought up. But I think it's safe to say that one of the core elements of a spiritual approach to leadership is being aware of your core values. At the end of the day, spiritual leadership is about values-driven leadership. So I write a couple of case studies in my book about leaders who became more effective once they had took the opportunity to reflect on their core values. What do they most care about? What is most important to them? If you take sort of the simple, you know, transactional components out of it in terms of profit or, you know, the bottom line or productivity or whatever you're calling, you know, typical business or even in a healthcare setting, your typical results focus, and think about values. Think about what you most care about. And when you bring those to the front, you bring those to your consciousness as a leader, then you're more likely to make decisions that are inclusive of what's best for the organization, what's best for the people that you lead, and ultimately what's best for the entire environment, whether it's the organization, the hospital, the community. So I think leading with a spiritual focus is really about values.
Yeah, completely agree with you. And I love it the way you mention it, that the spirituality is not necessarily the religion. So the spirituality and religion is completely can be two different or the same area. And it goes back to the values and the purpose and our sole purpose, actually.
Right.
That what are our values? What is our sole purpose, and why we are doing what we are doing as a leader?
Exactly.
And you talk about also the healthcare coaching and leadership in healthcare, especially how can be different. I mean, the coaching or the leadership or both in the healthcare setting, which is my passion.
Yeah, no, I know. That's one of the reasons why we at the Institute are so supportive of the work that you're doing in the healthcare space.
I really do appreciate that.
And there are a number of case studies in my book about coaching physicians who are in leadership roles. I think what's particularly unique about the healthcare environment and about being a doctor or a nurse or in any kind of healthcare leadership role is it's almost like an exaggerated form of stress and balance and focus, because in many cases you're dealing with life and death, and you're dealing with families, and you're dealing with situations that are particularly challenging on an emotional level.
Yeah.
And that makes being a leader in that environment even more difficult than, you know, working at a bank or working in a marketing company or something like that. You're really focused on a day-to-day basis on people's lives and on their health and on their well-being. And I don't think that it's, you know, fundamentally different to be a leader in a healthcare space than in any other, but I do think that the stress is exaggerated.
Uh-huh.
And so finding that personal balance so that you can stay connected to your values, so that you can be committed to helping patients as much as you take care of yourself. I mean, I do find that when I'm coaching either nursing leaders or doctors, that they're so committed to taking care of the patients that they often lose sight of taking care of themselves. And so the environment can be super stressful and people can easily get out of balance. So, you know, coaching leaders in that space requires even a more heightened level of self-awareness, because you obviously have to take care of yourself in order to be at your best when you're taking care of patients.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that makes it difficult in the healthcare space is the training that you receive as a physician is in most cases not focused on leadership. It's not focused on self-care. It's focused on diagnosing and fixing and healing the patients, which makes perfect sense. But when things get really stressful and you're like working in an emergency room or something like that, it's very easy to lose sight that you're in order for you to be at your best, you have to have a heightened sense of balance and self-awareness. So fundamentally, leadership in healthcare is not different from leadership anywhere, but the context is heightened and the stresses and the strains are heightened. So, you know, putting yourself first or putting the care and well-being of your team, if you have a team of nurses, if you have a team of tech people, you know, it's really important that you take care of them too. I have a couple stories in my book of when I was working with emergency room leader, surgical leader, an intensivist leader. And in all three of those cases, they had the best intentions. You know, they really want great outcomes for their patients, but they would sometimes lose sight of taking care of their team, sometimes taking care of themselves. You know, they would work crazy hours and they would have very, very high expectations of themselves, which makes perfect sense. But at the same time, it's really important for them to step back and to reflect on how are they taking care of the very people that do the work. You know, the best example is an emergency room leader that I worked with who was really tough on his team of doctors and nurses. But when one of them ended up in the emergency room, he was very compassionate, had a lot of empathy, and cared so much about taking care of that person when they were in the emergency room themselves. And I pointed out to him as his coach, why wouldn't he be just as compassionate and empathetic when he's working with them in the teamwork? And it was a real wake-up call for him to realize that when he was working with patients, he was in some ways more empathetic, more sympathetic, and more compassionate than when he was working with the team. And that was quite a wake-up call to realize that as a leader, you know, you need to take care of patients, but you also need to take care of the human beings that are running the emergency room or the surgical centers or any other place.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, the leadership in healthcare, so it's just under stress at the moment. So you are examining your values, you know, on the basis of your leadership values on the deadline, on a time limit situation. And that's what happens, that most of the leaders forget themselves. And as you mentioned, the self-leadership and self-care, you know, is the most important part of that. So they can carry their mission and their vision. And I remember you have been very nice, you know, you, Margaret, and Carol, actually, so helping me to do the webinars at Innova Health System, you know, for the leaders there. And we talked about your book, Flex, and over there. And we also talk about the new VUCA that you made. So out of the old VUCA, can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think what I was looking to do with the shift, VUCA is an acronym that people have become aware of. It's become kind of ubiquitous in the business vernacular. And I think people have seen it in a lot of different places, but it's typically thought of as volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It originally came out of the military when they were trying to upgrade their capabilities to deal with a very fast-changing environment, and some of the traditional ways that they had led the military activities was no longer effective. So I'm trying to remember now exactly how I updated it, but I think it changed it from volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous to vision, understanding, connection, and acceptance, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Exactly. Yes, that's correct. And how wonderful is that? So just that the vision, understanding and connectivity, you know, that all comes together.
It's not like the world is any less complex or uncertain or volatile. But as a leader in today's world, what does it take to be effective, especially coming out of a global pandemic and all of the disruption that we've all experienced in so many different ways in the world that continues, that in order to be truly effective in today's environment, you really have to have an inclusive vision. I would add, if I'm going to say vision, I would say inclusive vision, you know, one that leverages all the different talent of people from different cultures, from different races, different genders, to, as a leader, look around the room and recognize the talent you have and try to leverage and empower to bring the best out of those people. And then secondly, understanding is really important, and understanding comes from listening. The key skill maybe 15 years ago with most sort of authoritative leaders was being very directive and becoming a good boss, you know, being able to tell people what to do and get results. And, you know, these days, if you think about the new generation of leaders that are coming up, the Gen Zs and the variety of people that are likely to be on your team from all over the world, and then you add onto it that it's virtual in many cases, not everybody is working inside one office or one location. People are often, even my hospital clients, so they all work together when they are on their rounds or when they're doing their hospital work. But I notice that when they have meetings, they're still doing them virtually. So a lot of what it takes to be effective as a leader in a virtual space, when you're all on Zoom or Teams or some other technology, is to be a really good listener, to be curious, to go around the room and really check in with what's going on with other people, rather than diving immediately into the to-do list. Adding that extra time for understanding, reflection, really listening, getting to know where people are, that's actually key to the C of my new VUCA, which is connectivity. And I would say connectivity and communication. It's really important that if you want a collaborative environment, that you are listening at a deeper level to how people are really feeling in the workplace.
Yeah, and acceptance, the last one, the A stands for. And how positive is your new VUCA? You know, I still admire the old VUCA, the way that the acronym for it, but your new VUCA is just, to me, is a shift from negative to positive. That's where the action happens and the motivation, you know, comes into it. And I love it the way you put it, that the inclusive vision and the inclusive leadership, and that makes it that vision more deliverable, because if the vision is not deliverable, there is just nothing like a dream. Not that the dreaming is bad, but just to deliver that dream to reality as a vision, it needs an inclusive leadership. And with all being that said, do you have anything else at the end for our audience that I missed, you know, or you like them to know it?
I mean, I think the one thing that I would love to have written more about in the book, and I did write about it in one chapter, is creating an environment of mentorship, because we need our leaders to develop and leverage the next generation of leaders. And we had a panel at the conference, the Harvard Coaching Conference last spring. And we had four different generations. We had myself as a baby boomer, and we had a wonderful physician on the panel, African-American woman who was incredible. We had a millennial who was Muslim and from, I think she was from the Middle East. And then we had a Gen Z, who a young engineer who's a Japanese-American who joined us, and he's only 22 years old. And it was such a memorable experience for me to be on a panel with four generations.
Wow.
And we talked about mentorship, And one of the things that came up was how important it is for those of us that are baby boomers or traditionalists, you know, the older folks, to be good mentors for the millennials and for the Gen Zs. But our Gen Z, our 22-year-old member of the panel, spoke up and said, yeah, but you know what? We need to have reverse mentoring. We need to have, and we decided to call it mutual mentoring, where we actually listen to each other, the different generations. Because in today's workplace, you have people in as many as four or even five generations all working together. Many older people are staying in work. They're not retiring as early as they used to. They stay working for many, many years, and they stay healthy. And then we have these new generations that are coming up. And it's really important that we learn to work together and to leverage the talent, whether you're a Gen Z or a millennial or a Gen X or a boomer or a traditionalist. So bringing us all together and looking to create environments for what they called mutual mentoring. I thought that was a huge, wonderful takeaway from that panel, that we learned from each other. And, you know, there are so many ways that I can be mentored by the Gen Zs. They know how to use technology. They're comfortable with the latest and greatest artificial intelligence that comes along. And we need to learn from them, right? That would be the thing I'd leave the audience. Look for opportunities to create mutual mentoring.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the kids, I love it the way you said that the key is how we can learn from each other, and if we can work with each other for that common good and purpose. So to learn from the past, live in the present, and prepare for the future.
Right. I mean, we're all going to be working together. And, you know, it used to be that people would retire at 60, or the 20-year-olds would wait until they were 30 before they would want leadership roles. Those things have all changed. That's part of the disruption, is that, you know, the older folks have a lot of value, and they're staying healthy, and they're staying in the workplace longer. So we need to leverage those talents. Likewise, the younger folks that are coming up have so much creativity and curiosity and ideas. So if you're a leader and you're listening to this podcast, think about how you can leverage all the different diverse folks that you have in your team. I think that's key to success in today's world.
That's exactly some food for thought. So before we ending our session, and I'm hoping that the coaching, you know, and the coaches come as a catalyst here to help, you know, to this new way, the new VUCA, a new way of learning and growing together. I was listening to your LinkedIn conversation yesterday, you know, and about the ripple effect of coaching. And I think leadership is kind of coaching as well. And so if the leader just can start being coaching at the same time that doing a leadership, the ripple effect of leadership and coaching is contagious for the people, at least to 2-3 level around them. And that's how the magic happens.
Absolutely. Yes. That research, which was funded by the Institute of Coaching in part, and also led by a wonderful man named Sean O'Connor. You can look it up by Googling the ripple effect. Yeah. But it's a profound metaphor for the impact of coaching oriented leadership and coaching in general, because what he demonstrated was that when someone gets coached and becomes more of a flexible leader and a more positive leader in general, that the impact has a ripple effect on people that are directly connected to that leader, but even as far out as two or three people away from a leader, become more positive, more engaged, and more likely to contribute their talents. So this is the way to create a culture of collaboration in your organization.
Yeah, and I always says leadership is like parenthood. You set up a living example and a role models for others that are learning from you.
Absolutely.
And being that said, I really appreciate the kind of leader and mentor and coach that you are, you know, for the world and as a global coach and global leader. And I really appreciate you, as always, helping our coaching initiatives and being with us today.
My pleasure. I very, very much support what you're trying to do, bringing consciousness and into the healthcare space. And if there's anything that we can do to support you, you know we're here.
Yeah, I appreciate you and love you. Thank you so much, Jeff, and have a wonderful week and Thanksgiving holiday.
You too. All the best.
Goodbye to our listeners, and remember, one podcast at a time. Thank you for being with us for another one. You can visit our website at myconscious.org to learn more about us, or write to us at coach@myconscious.org. And please stay connected by following us on our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, not to miss our upcoming episodes and events. Love and light from all of us to you. Make it a great day, everyone.